Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Friday. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky. The Lakers have a new roster with Rui Hachimura. What should the rotation look like? That's next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everyone for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcast. By the way, sometimes on weekends as well. Don't forget the weekends. Don't just check out because sometimes it happens then too. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can go to participate in a super fast growing community of Lakers fans, more than 10,000 subscribers strong, and that keeps growing. And we appreciate everybody's participation there. You talk to us, we try to talk to you, and we try to use the stuff from that channel on this here show. Do want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNBA. Speaking of Andy, the YouTube channel, a lot to cover today. We'll talk a little bit about Lonnie Walker. Thursday, as we record, is the 3-year anniversary of the helicopter crash, the tragic crash that killed Kobe Bryant and his daughter and 7 other people, believe it was. 7. That is, we've got a couple little remembrances that we might try to get to before the end of the show. But speaking, Andy, of that YouTube, the people there were annoyed with me on Thursday. We spent a lot of time after Wednesday's show talking about the 3-guard lineup that, Darvin Ham deployed in that game, specifically Dennis Schroeder, Russell Westbrook, and Pat Beverly playing together.
Yeah, it's not a 3-guard lineup, Ryan. It's the 3-guard lineup. As I kept trying to tell you, because you kept bringing up other examples of 3-guard lineups of Darvin Grant. No, dummy. He's not. Right. These people are not upset, at least carte blanche, about a 3-guard lineup. They are upset about this 3-guard lineup. Also, for what it's...
This 3-guard lineup.
For what it's worth, just addressing something you brought up yesterday, I happened to be listening to the Lakers Film Room podcast with our buddies Darius, Mike, and Pete, and they were talking about this as well. And Darius looked up some of the stats afterwards, and those three played 12 minutes together. So okay, that's a quarter.
That was one of my questions.
Yeah, I told you they played a lot. You could have just listened to me.
But a lot isn't a number, Andy. I wanted a number.
It's a quarter of a game, man. Like,
I'm not debating that 12 minutes of what I was saying last night in the show for Thursday was I wanted a number. I wasn't aware of the number. So I would like to note my position on this. I'm not a huge fan of that lineup. It didn't bother me last night in Wednesday's game, I should say. Maybe it's because, ultimately it wasn't particularly damaging. Maybe it's because I was tired. But yeah, I don't necessarily want to see it a ton going forward, which brings me, Andy, to my next question for you. With Rui Hachimura in the lineup and Anthony Davis back, and presumably Lonnie Walker, who has begun 5-on-5 work, was dispatched down to the G League to get some work in and will be back up. That's just so he can practice because the Lakers are resting and is pretty close to a return, if not Saturday against Boston, pretty close. And Austin Reeves seems like he's about a week or so away, give or take. Okay, so with all that in mind, AD, let's start, the rotation with the beginning of the game. What would your optimal starting lineup look like? Who do you have in it?
If I had the ability to call the shots here, I think the starting lineup I would like to see is Schroeder, Troy Brown, Rui Hachimura, LeBron AD, with a bench that would be mainstays of, this is all, by the way, for the time being, maybe a trade happens, whatever, but for the time being, Russ, Reeves, Max Christie, and actually Wenyen Gabriel as the guys that you know are going to be getting bench minutes, and then situationals would be Lonnie, Beverly, and Thomas Bryant. Outside looking in would be JTA and Damian Jones.
I think you got a lot of friends here in this idea that you're basically functioning with one classic guard on the floor and then LeBron, you know, because yeah. You don't necessarily need two point guards. And Patrick Beverly isn't a point guardy point guard anyway. And so, but, you know, he would orchestrate and get you an offense better than Troy Brown would, but you don't need that with LeBron on the floor anyway, if you have Schroeder there.
How often does Pat do it anyway?
That's yeah. I don't mind that. I know you, I think you're a little bit of a bigger Troy fan than I am. But I don't mind that. I'd like to see Reeves in with that group, as opposed to Troy Brown. But I am also fairly agnostic about starting versus how many minutes are we talking about here?
To your point, I've written down Troy Brown 20 minutes, Austin Reeves 25 to 30. So even if Reeves was in these scenarios, Troy Brown's backup or sort of his backup, depending on positionality, I had Reeves playing more than Troy Brown. I like that potential alignment with Troy with the starters and the idea of being able to go still pretty big, but with some athleticism. You know, Troy is a credible enough shooter from the outside. He gives you a little bit, I think he gives you a little more defensive versatility than Patrick Beverly does. You get less of the guarding up, you get more switchability. So that would be it. But I agree with you. I would be looking for Reeves to play more than Troy, even if Troy starts.
All right, let's keep on this and explore this a little bit more coming up next. And then, like I said, before the end of the show, we'll try to throw in a little bit of a few remembrances of Kobe Bryant. I was asked by Roger Lodge, if you live or have been in L.A., Orange County over the last 20-something years, you certainly know Roger Lodge. And so I did his show. And we spent
or just
a lot
watched
of time
his dating game special.
There you go. Years ago. I spent a lot of time talking to Roger about Kobe on Thursday afternoon. So it's certainly top of mind. So we'll get to all that next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by LinkedIn. As a small business owner or hiring manager, success in 2023 all depends on your team members. And that's why you got to check out LinkedIn Jobs. With LinkedIn Jobs, you can hire qualified candidates more efficiently by using targeting tools to match open roles with people who have the skills, values, and experience to help you achieve your goals. LinkedIn goes beyond resume data by using insights from your job post, your company, and their 875 million profiles to land the most qualified candidates. LinkedIn Jobs makes it easy to screen and rate applicants all in one platform. And that's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. And you want to set a tone for your 2023 fiscal success right now from the jump. It's never too early. That means we are in a critical time. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the most qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonmba. That's linkedin.com/lockedonmba to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Before we get back to this rotation thing, you did mention, Andy, in the first segment, you know, this is all predicated on what things look like right now. It is worth noting that Brian Windhorst was on Thursday on ESPN and said the Lakers are certainly very interested still in trading Patrick Beverly, would be willing to trade Patrick Beverly. Not a real surprise there in the sense that, you know, Pat Bev's been a name that has been out there all year long as potential trade bait, if nothing else, because he makes the right amount of money.
I was going to say, is their only mid-sized salary?
But what I thought was interesting about that, more than Beverly's name specifically, was the idea that they'd be trading him now for guard help. The idea of being improving the guard rotation, more so than looking at wings. The Lakers with Hachimura in the lineup and Davis back, and established play from Thomas Bryant, established play from Wenyen Gabriel. You kind of know what you're getting there. You have Austin Reeves coming back as a 2-3. You have Troy Brown actually feel more solidified on the wing than they have in a long time, and with bigs in a long time. the Lakers would be just looking to make their guard rotation better, which I thought was an interesting wrinkle to the arc of Lakers needs over the last year. So,
yeah, it got me thinking. Eric Pincus, our buddy over at Bleacher Report, he's basically like a cap guru, him and Larry Kuhn, like GMs or franchises around the league actually, you know, go to them for advice. But he did a piece about guards around the league that could potentially be available. And he had listed the Lakers as a team interested in Fred VanVleet if the Raptors did move him. Like, the Raptors have a bunch of decisions right now with a lot of different players and basically just the direction of the franchise moving forward. And Russ is not really an option at all without a third team, because VanVleet makes about half of his salary and the Raptors don't have big enough other salaries that they'd want to realistically include that's enough money, and the Lakers don't have enough to make it like Fred VanVleet and OG Anunoby. Like, I don't see that happening.
Like, look, but, hey, it makes the math work if you want to give us OG. I would put it out there. The answer is no if you don't ask. But
it got me thinking, would you be willing to go Patrick Beverley, Lonnie Walker, and both firsts unprotected for Fred VanVleet? Which means you basically, when it comes to he's expected to be opting out of a deal next year that's worth around 23 million, something like that. If you give up those two firsts, he's got you a bit by the cojones when it comes to re-signing him. But he's a good player. He is a good player.
Here's Fred VanVleet is perfect for this conversation. Well, I'll give you my lineups here, back. We'll jump back into that in a second.
But yeah,
he's perfect for this, and I'll tell you why. Because it's a really hard decision. It's not, and he's emblematic of about the best I think you're going to do for those two picks. Like, whether you do it now, whether you wait for the summertime, it's gonna be really hard, I think, to do better than a player like VanVleet for the two first round picks that they have available to trade right now. VanVleet as a player, absolutely. Yes. I think, you know, and I like him with LeBron and AD. I think he's a perfect, I think, sort of number three, you know, so to speak. He's also perfect for LeBron and AD because, good God, he's hurt all the time. like the constant fear of injury would make him a good fit with LeBron, who has actually been fairly healthy this year, but will be 39 next year, and Anthony Davis, who is Anthony Davis. So in that sense, there's continuity. There is risk. There is potential reward. But I also think he is, do you disagree? If you think you're going to do better than VanVleet, I think you're probably fooling us. It's possible, but I feel like Fred is near the front end of the bell curve here.
Well, here's what I would say. I think he is as good as you're going to do in the near term, because in the offseason, assuming the Lakers keep Hachimura, they're not really going to have cap space to play with in a major way.
No.
And they won't have players on the roster that they could include with those firsts in like some type of sign and trade or whatever, a trade of any sort to use with those firsts to bring back a star. Like, they're not going to have they're not going to have the cap space available. They're not going to have the players that they could use. Like, you kind of in some ways have to do this now. And that was one of the things Windhorst talked about in mentioning that Patrick Beverley could be available. It's that acquiring Hachimura is seen by a lot of people, and I mean, this was a reaction you and I had, that the Lakers are not looking to be cap space players this offseason.
Just to put the math out there, let's just say he's got about a $19 million cap hold. The presumption from smart people is that the Lakers, if they like him and the rest of the season goes well and they want to keep him, would sign him to a new deal, remove his cap hold. But then obviously the new contract eats into his. So let's say Hachimura makes $10 or $11 million, that would knock the Lakers down to $19 or $20 million to spend, as opposed to 30 right. or 31 or 32. Which, and you're not signing a star for $19 million.
That's my point. It's not that you can't do anything in the offseason with your cap space, but at that point, you're not like a cap space player, or certainly not in the way
not for everybody a max always guy or anything like that.
Right. I was going to say, not in the way that everybody always assumes the Lakers, or sometimes the Lakers seem to assume themselves. So in that sense, Van Vliet would, I think, represent, I mean, forget whether or not the Raptors would actually do this. I'm just saying, as a theoretical, he basically represents about as well as I think you could do now, given the Lakers situation with those two picks. I agree.
Yeah. So, I mean, they have decisions to make. And a lot of the, some of the speculation from Windhorst was that, similar to Hachimura, if you traded Beverly, it would obviously, because otherwise there's really no incentive for the other team to take him. You would take on a player who is slated to make money into next year anyway. So again, you're building next
year. The Rozier's of the world.
For example, you're taking a player that would then be on your roster, or I guess trade fodder for next year. Again, kind of to your point, getting away from that idea of holding on to that cap space and looking for some big swing. I didn't mention, there were a couple of, one more thing I wanted to mention with the lineups. And then I was asked about one of my favorite Kobe stories on the radio on Thursday. So I thought we could have a little fun with that, because Andy, you were there as well. So we'll do that next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by FanDuel. The NFL playoffs are here. We are stoked about our new sports betting partner for Locked On, because they are the number one sports book in America, FanDuel. If you're new to FanDuel, that's even better. They have great features that make betting on sports fun and easy. New customers joining today, you can get started with $150 in free bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. Just sign up at FanDuel.com/LockedOn. FanDuel has your favorite bets, from the money line to the point spreads to the player props. The player props are always fun. And you can combine your bets for a chance at a better payout with the same game parlay. That's all on an app that's safe, secure, easy to use. So football fans, do not miss out. Place your first $5 bet to get $150 in free bets, win or lose, at FanDuel.com/LockedOn. Make every moment more with FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NFL.
So I more or less agree with you in terms of the players that I would include in the rotation. I think I probably would reserve a little bit of wiggle room. I feel like Thomas Bryant and Wenyen Gabriel are kind of an either or from a game to game situation. I think you are going to use Bryant in certain situations. You're going to use Gabriel in certain situations. It's going to be very difficult for both of them to see significant minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Just because there's no space, and people are upset. This is the other thing. People were, there are a lot of people who want to see Wenyen Gabriel play a lot. I am not one of them necessarily. I do think, he's an awesome guy to have in your roster, and he's played really well, and I'd love to see the Lakers hold on to the guy for a long time, but he is limited. There are limitations to him, and there are times when you're going to need a big who is Thomas Bryant. You might need somebody with a little bit more, shooting ability, a little more offense, whether that's more Hachimura if his defense holds up, whether that's a little extra Troy Brown. So I more or less agree with the players that you had, though, in the they're definitely going to play rotation. I'm curious what you want to see is your closing lineup, though, because that's not necessarily the same thing. Your starting lineup, which I am much more agnostic on than a lot of basketball fans, I feel like, how many minutes are you playing and who's on the floor at the end of the game? So who's your closing five?
Okay. I've got 4 out of 5 pretty definitive, and that would be LeBron, AD, Reeves, and Schroeder. And by the way, props to Schroeder, who is a player that I've been pretty hot and cold on his whole career, but I've really liked the way he's played this year. I think he's made a really concerted effort to play much more under control within a team scheme, all of that stuff. I've been very pleased with him. The fifth guy is a little fluid for now. Like, I need to see more of Rui Hachimura before I can just automatically say he should be closing games. I just need to see more of it to see how it would work. But I have him as a possibility. I have Troy Brown as a possibility. I have Max Christie as a possibility, because he's played some high leverage moments and I think done well. And I have to say, as much as I know a lot of people hearing this will hate it, if he's playing under control and the situation calls for it, Russ can be, I think, a guy that is useful in the starting, in the closing lineup. I just don't think he automatically should be there.
Yeah, I think in a perfect world, they would love to see Hachimura be a guy who could play that role. I agree with you. It is an open question as to whether or not his defense will be consistently good enough, because it wasn't in Washington. I mean, again, not trying to crush the guy, not saying it was a bad trade or whatever, but again, there's a reason the Wizards had him available for 3 second-round picks, and part of it is he's never been a particularly consistent defender, or by consistent, I mean good. And NBA defense is incredibly complicated and incredibly difficult. And the attention to detail there is hard to maintain. Lonnie Walker was doing his best at the beginning of the year, and you know, it has faded a little bit, and it's hard to maintain that. Teams become much better about seeing potential weaknesses and attacking you in different ways. But I agree, if Hachimura can hold up, I think that's what they would love to see. And I have the same other four guys, LeBron, AD, Reeves, and Schroeder. I see that fifth spot in some ways kind of like the difference between Thomas Bryant and Wenyen Gabriel. There are times, as much as people dislike him, where Patrick Beverley makes sense as, you know, because of a specific defensive matchup and the way that Pat Bev defends. If it happens to be a day where he's making three-pointers and taking them. Ideally, though, my five would be, I think what I want and what they want is LeBron, AD, Russ, Schroeder. LeBron, AD, Reeves, Schroeder, and Hachimura. Next there would be, probably be somebody like Pat Bev or Russ, depending on the situation, because it's probably pretty specific. Do you think that's what Darvin is going to do? Because it doesn't matter what we think.
I mean, I would say that Darvin, I think four of the five that we identified, LeBron, AD, Reeves, and Schroeder, I do think are going to be in that closing lineup for Darvin. A fair
already time. Making progress. This is good.
I think, were I to guess, you know, I mean, we haven't, you know, obviously haven't seen them all together in a while, and you know, and how it all looks, but I'm guessing those four will be closing a lot of games. You know, Darvin has shown that he will sit Russ in the fourth. He's also shown that, I think, all things being equal, Russ is somebody who, again, when playing under control and within the team dynamic, he's in the upper third of talent on this team. And sometimes talent is, you know, the deal breaker in terms of winning or losing in a tight spot. But, you know, you can't have some of the, you can have a little bit of the chaos that comes with Russ in tight situations. You just can't have it all. I think Bev, like you said, I mean, when we talked about starting lineups, you know, and the rotation, I had said in my perfect world, Beverly would be more situational. What I think it's going to be is Patrick Beverly starting as long as he's on this team. I think Darvin Ham trusts him. And because of that, I think you're correct.
Because that's going to be my next question. Do you think the three-guard lineup that everybody hates is going to be continue to be a mainstay? Because I actually don't. Once everybody's available.
God, I'd like to think it wouldn't be. I mean, all you know, acknowledgement of venting that went on aside, with everybody available, it is hard to think of the examples where that three-guard lineup is actually needed. I mean, like, how often do you actually need?
But that's been the complaint, is that he plays it even when it's not needed. That's what I'm getting at.
I just said I'd like to think that he wouldn't. I'd like to think that. You ask me if I'm 100% sure it's not going to happen. No. But I do think, though, that Darvin is starting to become more inclined to move away from as many small lines. I think it's part of the reason why people got so upset during this Spurs game. It's because he hadn't been doing it for a while. Then all of a sudden, he's got these larger options as players in front of him and goes back to it. I think that's part of the reason why it upset people a lot, because it's like, the hell, man? You haven't been doing it for a month and now you're doing it? Like, really?
Yeah, again, I think it was context related, but I am confident that down the stretch, we're not going to see that three guard lineup, maybe that three guard lineup. And it should be noted, both of us did not see necessarily a prominent place for Lonnie Walker.
I am really, really curious to see what happens with Lonnie coming back
when everybody's available. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to be really interested to see it.
Before we go, I mentioned at the top of the show, most Laker fans certainly aware of it. The 3-year anniversary of the death of Kobe Bryant, along with the other passengers on that helicopter. I was on Roger Lodge's show today, Orange County, the ESPN affiliate, and he asked me my favorite Kobe story. And the one that I remember that I loved, it kind of goes back to when at the old facility in El Segundo, when the media room was adjacent to the practice court, and players every once in a while kind of pop in on their way to different parts of the building or the back of the parking lot or just to say hi or whatever. And he happened to come in on a day where Andy and I were showing the rest of our media cohorts the Sasha Vujacic website. SV18.com. This back in the early days of sort of athlete social media, creating a brand or whatever. And God bless him, it was not good. The content was not good. We got years of mileage out of the stuff that was on SV18.com. And Kobe, there were a few things in my memory that I think Kobe enjoyed more than the opportunity to fillet Sasha Vujacic for any particular reason. And he saw it as we were watching this video. And I got the impression, Andy,
a lot of videos of Sasha walking down the beach talking while like really bad tinny reggae was in the background, like basically just steel drums, like really bad steel drum effects.
And the look of giddiness on Kobe's face that he now had this thing that he could go back into the locker room to mock Sasha Vujacic with. It was so much different than like what you like the perception of Kobe as surly and you know, short tempered and some of these other things. Like he was excited and like childlike in his mischievousness of all the plans and things that were going through his head of the fun that he could have in the locker room, in that like locker room environment, roasting Sasha Vujacic. And that was one that is a memory of Kobe, because it's sort of behind the scenes. It wasn't a public thing where people could see it, that really stuck out to me. And I know you were there.
I do remember that. It was very, very funny. He did love the, we covered Sasha, got along with him very well. Sasha earned every bit of
all of it.
He earned every bit of the joy that Kobe took in making fun of him. You know, there was, I remember just favorite conversations I had with Kobe were just like discussing movies or TV. Like he'd occasionally ask people what they watched, and he knew just from conversation we had that I tended to watch a lot of stuff. So, conversations like that, and this like genuine intellectual and creative curiosity that he had, that you and I always really found so interesting about him and admirable about Kobe. And that is in part, I know I've said this before, but with Kobe's death, it still feels just weird. And like, it's in part because he was iconic in a city that you and I live in, and we see remembrances of him all the time. Like the area I live in, there's a handful of murals within just a few miles of me. So I'm constantly driving by these, these paintings of Kobe. And, it's a city that is never going to forget him. Like, understandably, he's always going to loom large, but like just the idea of him being gone is weird too, because we had seen so much of him post basketball. He was very visible, doing very interesting things that people wanted to see where it was going, with the storytelling that he always talked about. Like I was thinking about this today. If Tim Duncan died suddenly, it would obviously be very sad. It would be a tragedy. He has a family that would, he was also a franchise icon. He was a city icon, but it wouldn't be weird in the same way, because Tim Duncan was basically invisible after basketball. Like, Tim Duncan did his best to be invisible while he actually played. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's, and I'm not trying to. No, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. It is strange.
It's just very, it's still very weird.
Yeah. And there are all kinds of other things that come up when you start thinking about it. You know, sort of the end of, I think about, like, Kobe in hindsight was sort of, I think, one of the last kind of accessible superstars in a way that the league isn't accessible anymore. Like, for people covering a team. So there's stuff there. He's still very much central to how the Lakers run the organization. So there's lots of different things that are still very relevant about Kobe and the memory of Kobe that perhaps we talk about on a different day. But I just, I wanted to relay that story because it was a different little bit of a window into the sort of more mischievous, funny side of Kobe. He was a very funny guy.
I was going to say he had a terrific sense of humor. Like, he was a legit funny guy.
All right. So Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can go to see the show and participate in the community. Huge road trip for the Lakers starting Saturday in Boston. All five teams currently in the playoff race that they play on this Eastern Conference swing. It is a doozy. Five-game road trip, not on the Eastern Conference. But it is a doozy of a trip. So we'll see how they do. Hopefully getting more guys back on the floor before it's all over. We'll see everybody next time.